Well, today we continue in our slow and deliberate walk through one of our favorite Sunday school stories of all time, the story of David bringing down the giant Goliath. By walking slowly through 1 Samuel chapter 17, by foregoing the temptation to run to David's moment of victory, God's victory, we are learning that in this story, in order for David to slay the giant Goliath, there are other giants along the way that need to be brought down. Today's giant, comfort. Let us pray. O Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditation of all of our hearts prove to be pleasing and acceptable in your sight. O Lord, our rock and redeemer. Amen. Say the word pitbull, and then 150 pounds, and most reasonable people, their heart skips a beat. Understandably, pit bulls have a reputation for being canines with jaws, teeth, power, and determination not only to kill other dogs, but on occasion, as we hear about once or twice a year, human beings. However, you've never met Buster, the giant 150-pound American Gatorhead pit bull who lives with his family in Caledonia, Mississippi. Renee Castleman began a high-end breeding company specializing in Gatorhead pit bulls. Renee said that she became hooked with massive, gigantic pit bulls after she had one as a pet, over 100 pounds, a pit bull named Titan. But today, for her and her family, their pride and joy is a 150-pound Buster. Now, the Castlemans, they have a few elementary school children, and those children have friends who come over to their spacious country estate where they have home and business together. She says that she keeps her eyes on her kids and their friends, but she has no concern whatsoever that Buster and the other giant pit bulls will ever harm their children. Now, because of trademark limitations, I can't show you the actual pictures of Buster. I think that would have cost $7, and I'm too cheap to spend $7 on a picture that's going on a screen. But to give you a sense of what these gigantic pit bulls look like in their family settings, let's take a look at some of these pictures. Oh, isn't that cute? You ready to go home? You ready to call down to Mississippi and get one of these for your grandkids? Okay, let's take a next one. Oh, how gentle. Who would even think twice about placing a newborn infant next to a 140-pound pit bull? And then the final. Oh, so very sweet. It seems on the surface, Renee Castleman's correct. Giant pit bulls, giant dogs, I guess of whatever breed, originally bred to fight and kill, can be trusted. And they are indeed so cute and lovable. Renee's husband says about his wife, her kids, Renee's kids come first, but then after the kids, most days, it's Buster and the other dogs, followed by him. Mr. Castleman says, yes, our dogs look fierce, but all of them are just gentle giants. Gentle giants do come in the form of 150-pound American pit bull, Gatorhead pit bulls, but despite these breeders' assurance, you do have to wonder, can soft, sweet, innocent-looking, gentle giants, can they really be trusted? In our text today, Saul, David's brothers, and the entire Israeli army has fallen spell to a giant who has moved right up with them on the summit that they're occupying. And this giant, this gentle giant, a gentle giant that few of us ever give two thoughts about, it isn't named Buster, but instead the giant now encamped with Israel's army is a giant named Comfort. Think of Ken Burns' monumental series, The Civil War, and how well Burns in that series, PBS series, tells the story of life for a typical soldier during the Civil War, especially a Union soldier in Union camps. Up to that point in history, world history, no army had been so well supplied, including with creature comforts, than the Union army led by risk-adverse generals such as George McClellan. In that spirit, the author of 1 Samuel gives us a picture in our text today of camp life for those who are now being commanded by risk-adverse King Saul. Well, a typical day looked like this. Goliath would descend from the opposite summit occupied by the Philistines. The Israeli scouts would certainly blow the horns. There's a Philistine. It's Goliath coming into the valley. The drums would roll. Suddenly, the army, Israel's army, the men would emerge from their tents. They would grab their gear, grab their swords and shields, spears. They would muster along the summit as they watched Goliath descend to the bottom of the valley, where he issued twice a day same speech. Slurs against them, slurs against their King Saul, and slurs against the God of Israel, the one God, the true God. And then it would end with a challenge. You don't like what I'm saying? Would one of you cowards come down to the valley so we could duel to the death, winner take all? Well, after the speech, Goliath would turn around. He would head back up to the summit with his army. And with the threat contained, the Israeli soldiers returned to their tents. There, of course, were daily chores to care for. There were some drills, some practicing, no doubt. Perhaps an afternoon siesta awaited many of them. Then evening, same drill. Horns would blow as the sun began to set. The army would quickly muster. The drums would roll. They would listen to Goliath's same speech that he gave 10 hours ago. And then when he turned around, and behind him, that gigantic shadow, as they watched him walk back up to the summit with the Philistines, suddenly the officers would bark those sweet words for any soldier. Dismissed. Samuel shows us baskets full of bread and cheese. After dinner, it's chill time now. In ancient times, it was very rare for armies to fight during the night. After sunset, you were safe. Time to gather around bonfires for the type of conversation men have around campfires. In turn, I'm sure they shared ideas on how someone other than the one who was doing the opining needed to go down there to defeat the giants. Everyone had an opinion on how this problem would be solved. I'm sure around those campfires, they quietly and consistently complained about their leaders. Beyond that, they probably shared stories of past campaigns. God had provided victory after victory for Israel's army in the past. And they shared, I'm sure, some humor. Humor which was off color. These are soldiers, remember. All the while, the bread and the cheese is passed again and again. For 40 days, 40 days, this was the pattern. This was the routine. Was there fear on the summit for Israel's army? You bet there was. There was real fear. This was a winner take all. This could be the end of them, their families, and the nation. But there was something else on the summit. Every time they watched that giant walk back up, there was comfort. Comfort which kept Saul and his officers from decisive action. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe some, including Israel's king, thought that maybe just a few more days of this, or maybe just a few more weeks, if we could hold out, maybe we can sue for peace with Goliath and his band of mercenaries. Perhaps Saul would need to surrender access to this strategic valley, so important for their national survival. He'll have to secede that. But in return, maybe he would have some assurance, a promise that he could trust that that's all the Philistines wanted. Maybe by just giving a slice of the land, a land given to them by God, maybe all of this fuss and pain could be avoided. Most of us here today, if we had to name our giant, our Goliath, the challenge we're standing before at this moment, most of us could clearly see that. Or if you can't clearly see that, life is good. Enjoy it while it lasts. It has a shelf life. You can remember a giant that you face in the past. But there is one insidious giant that threatens all of us at this moment, and that's comfort. Yes, our deep reliance, of course, in this culture upon our creature comforts that we don't even think twice about. Those creature comforts that lure us away from digging deep to do the work we need to do. And then there's another type of comfort. It's more unsettling. Sometimes we have a hard time seeing our comfort, simply accepting our dysfunction as the status quo. Comfort with the dysfunction. Comfort with the status quo. What might growing comfortable with accepting status quo, what might comfort with dysfunction look like in real time for us? Well, it may look like this, you and your spouse knowing that there are red flags, there are issues in the marriage. Sure, you may have tried counseling in the past, tried to work on it in the past, but you know how that goes. Addressing cracks, seeing them, and working to fix them, it requires great, great effort. So one may think to themselves, let's get past the vacation. Let's give it a couple weeks to see where we're at after that. Yeah, you're stuck in a routine, and comfort with the dysfunction has enabled you to be comfortable and satisfied with a marriage that could be so much more. What's settling for the comfort of giant, the giant of comfort look like? Well, you've lost your drive, the drive you once possessed. Remember when you said that this job or this position, it was only for a season. Your current 9-to-5 was meant to be just a temporary camp up the mountain that you're climbing, but suddenly it's become a duplex with a three-car garage. You know, this wasn't your first choice of a job, but pay is good. You like the coworkers who surround you in your cubicle. The retirement plan. Retirement plan's really solid. You've become comfortable, and the drive, your destiny, is you let it go for every Friday morning donuts. You were designed for more, and you know that. But you're settled. It's comfortable. Comfort, security, routine is such an insidious giant, brothers and sisters. It robs you and me of being our best, not only for ourselves, not only for our families, not only for each other, but for the God who has called and equipped us to fulfill the destiny that God dreams for each and every one of us. I wonder, and I'm about to get in trouble on this one, I wonder if this picture of Israel's comfortable camp life, if it may be a cautionary tale for our church. Amid our meetings and routine programs, our favorite pews, have we forgotten the mission? Have we forgotten His commission? Has comfort, this gentle giant, hindered us from being the church that Jesus Christ has called, equipped, gifted us to be? Making disciples who have experienced a life change, a change in their family, a change for this city, a change for this nation, and a change for the world. Have we become too comfortable? I'm just going to set that out there for all of you to continue that conversation. In these instances and many more that I haven't touched upon, has comfort, the insidious, gentle giant, led you to make peace with a status quo that is so far different than God's dream for you and for us? Enter David to the summit. David is doing what so many other Jewish boys are doing each and every day. He is walking up the summit with grocery bags filled with warm bread and zesty cheese. He has made this journey before. I mean, his brothers, they had to eat more than once over 40 days. But for the first time, he gets to the summit as the horns are blowing and as Israel's army is mustering in the morning for you know what. David begins to run alongside the soldiers, alongside his brothers, as they muster in a line. And now he, for himself, for the first time, beholds the challenge. He now beholds the problem. He hears for himself a speech that Saul, his brothers, and every soldier on the hill has now heard 79 times in a row. And as Goliath turns and the soldiers return to tables and tents, David drops the groceries. David reaches for his sling. Saul, his officers, David's brothers, have not mustered the will to address this situation for 39 days, 23 hours, and 50 minutes. Yet David, in 10 minutes, is able to access the situation. He sees the problem, and he sees the path of victory. It just requires decisive action. Action, trusting not in his own strength, but trusting in Israel's God, he is willing to take. None of the fearful and the comfortably full have the stomach for what's required. But David does. By choosing to act boldly, choosing to risk, choosing not to kick the can down the road, choosing to put his faith in God, than what seems possible. David brings down in this prophetic moment the giant of comfort that entire army was besieged by. He knows undoubtedly one cannot fulfill their destiny, God's best for one's life, until this gentle brother of Goliath, this brother giant of comfort, is brought down first. I find it, as a preacher, extremely discomforting when Sunday's text causes me to attempt to practice what I'm going to share with you in a couple days. It's so much easier, would you not agree, so much easier to preach a sermon than to live it. Can the church say amen on that? So much easier to commend a manner of life for all of you rather than make that my manner of life. This week for the 4th of July holiday, my co-parent, best mother in the world, Kim, she had the kids and took them to a friend's house up in Michigan, to the lake. So instead of residing in town for a couple days by myself, I decided to take a little road trip to Cincinnati, back to old stomping grounds, old friends. I caught a Reds game on 4th of July, visited the Montgomery Inn, which is the place for the very best ribs in the world. A couple days simply to unplug and reconnect with good friends that I haven't seen in many, many years. Well, on the way down, I called one of my best friends in the world. He is definitely one of my besties. I talk to him every week. Announced that, you know, I kind of made this sudden decision on the fly. I was coming down, and I would love to connect. He's like, oh, that's awesome, man. That's great. Let me check with my wife. And I'm like, really, dude? I'm talking only like a couple hours, man. I'm not gonna barge in on your 4th of July. We can do this on Friday, maybe a couple hours for breakfast, lunch, dinner. You know, even if you're in transit on the 4th of July, I'll see you for 15 minutes for a cup of coffee. He said, she'll be cool. Wendy will be cool. I retorted, no way. Once Wendy finds out that Doug is coming to town, no way Wendy is going to be cool. My friend, let's just call him Mike, we've been friends since seminary. And in the early years, our families were really tight. Then we had a falling out, not me and Mike, a falling out between me and Wendy. It wasn't a one-time thing. It was kind of a series of things over the couple of years. And I won't bore you with the details, though the details are pretty interesting. But our relationship cooled. It eventually froze into a long-standing, decades now standing, at least a decade, Cold War. No more invitations to Mike's house if Wendy was there. Certainly no more dinner parties that Wendy would throw. I would be invited to. And I was fine with that. It was so bad, so cold, no invitation to their large 25-year wedding anniversary party a couple years ago. That one hurt. Mike called back and said, we could meet on our way to fireworks Thursday. We can have dinner actually close to you downtown. I said, we? Who's we? Are you talking you and Wendy? Are you nuts? Your wife can't stand me. She loathes me. And as you know, your wife is not on my Christmas card list either. He said, man, come on. It's time to move past this. It's time just to get over this. It's time to move on. And I protested. Oh, boy, I reached for my comfort food. I'm trying to escape stress for 48 hours by taking this trip. And you are now, I'm at a red line, even thinking about sitting down with your wife. He countered that. He kept pushing. So at this point, I played the last trump card that I had. I said, man, I don't think I'm emotionally ready to have that conversation. Talk about the card that guarantees the can gets kicked. He fired back. If the president could go to the DMZ, you could go to dinner with my wife. With the urging of another friend who really encouraged me, and thinking about this story, watching David drop his bags in order to pick up his sling to bring down a giant, I realized that the giant of comfort with this dysfunction had to fall in order for a bigger giant, a red-coated giant named unresolved resentment, would fall. I arrived first. I secured the table. My heart literally skipped beats as I watched Mike with Wendy walk into the restaurant. To be honest, it was very, very uncomfortable at first. It was hard to look one another in the eye. But as we continued to eat and share and talk about our lives, good, bad, ugly, all of this, we ended with Mike extending an invitation for next time. How about our place? You've never seen our new pool. And then Wendy. Wendy said something about a cookout. Before you grab the tool you need to bring down the giant standing between you and your God-by-design destiny, drop the bread and cheese. Allow the thrill which comes with discomfort to move you forward, because it really represents. It represents your next step on the march toward your destiny.